Into the Fold is a podcast on mental health issues produced by the Haug Foundation for Mental Health. The Haug Foundation is part of the Division of Diversity and Community Engagement at the University of Texas at Austin. The podcast is entirely funded by the Haug Foundation and produced by Haug Foundation staff. The views you are about to hear do not reflect those of the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, a podcast on mental health issues. I am your host, Ike Evans, and today we are bringing you episode 103, COVID-19 and our schools.
What we do is so foundational to kids being successful, and having it been in school, there was easy access. And so relooking and reshaping what we're doing and going to where they're at and connecting with the families where they are, becoming more integrated into their day-to-day and checking in was huge.
Schools have become a flashpoint in the larger debate about how we balance living our lives and keeping ourselves safe in the time of COVID. And it's not hard to see why. As long as schools were closed, so many other facets of life were also disrupted. Schools are vital not just because they're where we go to learn, but as part of the glue that holds communities together. They serve as a crucial bridge between families, young people, and essential services and community resources. They're where kids start to develop the social and economic skills they'll need to function as adults. And they act as a de facto childcare provider for overstretched parents. And increasingly, schools are also sites of mental health care. In 2017, the Haug Foundation launched the Improving Academic Achievement Through Mental Health in Schools initiative. The foundation awarded nearly $2 million to 7 organizations to improve academic achievement and mental wellness in educational settings. One of those organizations, Communities and Schools of North Texas, near Denton, specializes in dropout prevention. They received a grant of about $317,000 from the Haug Foundation to support their Empowering Minds initiative. We are joined today by their Chief Strategy Officer, Tasha Moore, and by Sookie Steinhauser, CEO of Communities and Schools of Central Texas, based in Austin. They're here to share some wisdom about keeping kids in school at a time when school no longer means what it used to. Sookie and Tasha, thanks for joining us. So this question is for both of you. How has the pandemic impacted your work and the work of dropout prevention in general?
Well, this is Sookie, and I'll just tell you that I think it's important to start with giving a little bit of a definition of what dropout prevention is in general and really what it is from the CIS perspective. So how we approach dropout prevention is that we identify strengths and support systems that a child has and the obstacles that they have to being successful in school. And then we help them to navigate their way to overcome the barriers in their path. And so dropout prevention is really that combination of unleashing the capabilities that the student has and the resources that they have, and also helping to fill in the resources that they may not have. And with Communities and Schools, you know, it's not a cookie cutter program. We're there on campus to help students with whatever the obstacle or obstacles they face are. And so the pandemic presented us with a kind of an existential question because, you know, we're called Communities in Schools. So what happens when you can't be in schools? And so we had to all, you know, my affiliate and then affiliates all over the state had to really quickly realize that we are an essential social services and the students still need us, but instead of being in the school building, we needed to be spread throughout the community. So it impacted our work because we weren't able to be together with our students for many months, But on the other hand, it helped us to connect with families more, and it helped us to be able to be available to students regardless of a school schedule if there were crises happening.
Yeah, I would agree 100% with Suki. What we do is so foundational to kids being successful, and having it been in school, there was easy access. And so relooking and reshaping what we're doing and going to where they're at and connecting with the families where they are, becoming more integrated into their day-to-day and checking in was huge. I think it also, for us in North Texas, it really highlighted the disparity that was taking place with some of our students and our families, that they, in a lot of ways, were able to work around and find resources and be really innovative in their own families. But as those things came about, helping to build those relationships and build those connections back and build up a stronger community for them was a huge thing for us that helped with our work.
For our listeners who are interested in the well-being of kids, and this question is for both of you, what are some things that you think are decisively important in keeping kids in school at this time? Tasha, we can begin with you.
Things that come to my mind right off the bat are they know that where they're going, so when they go to their campus, or they're at home, that they are healthy and safe. And so they feel comfortable coming on to the school. They know that the people there are going to care for them. They're going to take care of them. Part of that is relational. And so feeling that connection, that not only is the person going to physically keep me safe and I can trust them, but also they care that I do well in school and that they care that I am successful. And that right now, I think is so important and something we really have to emphasize, because with the pandemic, we've been living in a kind of a fight or flight stage consistently for months. And so just as adults, it's hard for us at times to take a breath and de-stress. We've got to be that person for those kids. And so in addition to the health and the safety and the relationships, being a place where a student can come in and breathe, they can decompress and just know that everything doesn't have to be about the pandemic and everything doesn't have to be about school. And I can have a moment to be a kid and have fun.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we have relationships as human beings that are supportive. And for certain, students experience a lot of those supportive relationships in school. And so not being able to come back, or now coming back to school and being isolated in small groups, we have our work cut out for us to help kids to feel that kind of support. It's really important that we find our way to getting all the kids back to school. And it's going to be so challenging to do that safely over the course of the next several weeks or several months. But we need our kids in school, because there are a lot of adults in the school building who keep an eye on students. These are the same adults that are going to notice behavioral changes that might indicate that something's not right at home, or they're going to be the adults who find out that a family member of the student has lost a job, or they've lost somebody to the virus. And we need to have those connections. So It is really challenging to be able to pay attention to children's mental and emotional well-being and physical well-being when they're not at school. And so today, even if the kids are, if school is open, but it's virtual, we're not putting our eyes on those students, and we're not able to necessarily capture what their challenges really are. I also think it's really important at this time, when we aren't necessarily able to see the students if they're not back to school physically, during this period where we are actually physically isolated, kids are more likely to experience loneliness, anxiety, or even clinical depression if they're isolated. So, you know, as human beings, we're social. We need to be around other people. And, you know, people of all ages thrive in community, and that is so incredibly disrupted by having this coronavirus present in our communities.
So this question is for Tasha. Your organization, Communities and Schools of North Texas, was a recipient of a Hogg Foundation grant to improve academic achievement through mental health in schools. What can you tell us about your grant-funded project and the impact that it's having?
Yes. So we did a 3-year grant where we used support from the Hogg Foundation to bring on a mental health coordinator. So prior to having a mental health coordinator, we had some staff in the role of a site coordinator on campus who could provide mental health services based on their background and education. But we really wanted to be able to offer those supports and services across the board to all of our students. So adding this coordinator, they were tasked with working with all of our site coordinators to identify students on their campus who were showing signs of some type of mental health or wellness need, where this coordinator could go deeper with them. It's not just let's work on social skills, but it's you recently experienced a death in your family and we can tell that that's really impacting you. How can we talk through it? How can we grieve together? How can we build our coping strategies together? And so we tasked that person and they did a fabulous job. We did everything from providing assessments and referrals and connecting students and families with long-term mental health counseling and support in the community. So if it wasn't something that we could address in a school year, we really wanted to make sure that we were not just doing a Band-Aid, but that we made sure that we educated the family on why it was important to find a long-term care and support. If we were able to address the need in school, the mental health coordinator would go to the campus. They'd work with our site coordinator and they would schedule the time. Student would meet for a 45-minute to an hour session and they could receive their individual counseling on campus. It was amazing just to see how well our students and our families responded. We were really worried that there might still be some lingering stigma around it, but when families heard that it was free, that there were no transportation barriers, there were no barriers to access, they were all for it. And over the last 3 years, it's been a great success. Besides just the work on campus with students, we also added in some education and awareness in our community and amongst our staff. We took time to build some professional development within our team and making sure that they were comfortable and confident about what some of those precursors they could be looking for. So if you notice these changes in a student's behavior, you notice these changes in a student's academics, it could be some things that the mental health coordinator could help support. We also worked with our schools and our community to do educational events. So if it was a career day or a college fair day, one of the things the mental health coordinator would do would go on campus and host a session for the students about how are you dealing with preparing to transition into a new life stage? And let's talk about coping strategies you can use out when you're on your own. And what do you do if your friend tells you something that's concerning? And really making sure that from the student all the way up to our community, they were aware of things that they could do that were practical to support each other and reduce that stigma. One of the things we did that we were blown away with by the response during the pandemic was we hosted a webinar for local practitioners and parents. And we got to hear from a student about what it felt like for them to deal with anxiety and how it felt physically in their body and the things that not only their parents, but their teachers at school were able to do to help them work through that during the school year. So for us, it's been a great success and a huge additional support to our programs. We've expanded this year to have 2 mental health coordinators. Part of that is just to meet the need that we've seen consistently over this time. And that's a little bit about our project.
Okay, great. So this question is for both of you, kind of individually in turn. Campus reopening schools reopening has everyone up in arms. I think that's safe to say. So I'm thinking, I was hoping that, you know, both of you could just give a sense of what that has looked like in your particular communities, the challenges that you've encountered, and whether it has turned out to be as challenging and stressful as you imagined it would be, or more so or less so. Sookie, why don't we start with you and about, you know, the Austin area?
Oh, sure. Yeah. As we said, we're I'm in Central Texas, and so we're serving 7 school districts that are including Austin ISD, but also 6 other districts that are more rural. And, you know, that ranges from a district that has just 1 high school to AISD all the way up to 80,000 students and 130 campuses. So every district has had a different approach to reopening. We had some of our campuses opening, I think August 17th was the first, and some of them opened October 4th to students on campus. So that's a big range. But what they have in common is that all of the school districts, I think, are hyper-focused on student and staff safety and student re-engagement. I think they are all working really hard, knowing the, you know, the barriers that are out there to kids coming back to school and re-engaging fully. So really at all of our schools, the teachers and the counselors, as well as our communities and school staff that are based full-time on campus, they're doing a lot of outreach to parents and guardians to get in touch and to register students and really to explain to the families what safety precautions are in place and, you know, what the schedule's going to look like and whether their children are going to come back on the first week or the second week or which days or which times and what's going to happen, what's it going to look like. So the, in order to help families and kids be less stressed about coming back to school, there's just had to be a lot of communication. And of course, communication is always so challenging. And we're all so overwhelmed with information that, you know, it's really not easy, but I see a huge commitment on the part of the schools to make sure that the families understand, you know, kind of the whole situation and how much has been put in place to keep their kids safe. And of course, to keep the teachers safe as well. But it's been really complicated to create all those systems. It's systems for learning that can help keep students continue to be socially distanced and safe, but also be able to be in the building.
Okay, and you, Tasha?
So it's very similar. In North Texas, our districts have all taken slightly different approaches from staying 100% virtual for an extended period of time to a hybrid where some are in person and some are virtual. Communication, I think, is something we've seen as well that districts have really committed to make sure that whether it's a dashboard or weekly emails and updates or just being out and about when it's pickup time on the campuses, making sure that parents know what's going on, really trying to make sure that it's not just a here's what you have to do, but let us know how it's going. Let us know if this is working. We've seen some of our districts adjust 2 weeks into school and change their protocols and procedures because it wasn't what was working best for students and for their teachers. So that's really encouraging to see our educational leadership in the area really listening and making those adjustments for what's best with kids. For us, it's interesting too. We span across 2 counties, and so just watching health data that comes in from the 2 different counties and seeing just the difference. One county sometimes is way higher than the other in their information and their numbers, and so having to respond not only as school districts but also as an organization to balance between the different campuses, the different districts, the different counties, and making sure that our staff as well are well informed about what's going on. And I think the theme for the year is just to be flexible and to be open.
Sookie, this next question is all for you. Have there been any silver linings while, you know, people have been just going through this very challenging time?
Oh, I think we're in, when we look in the rearview mirror someday at this, we're going to see a lot of silver linings, but it doesn't feel like that right now. But I can just say right off the bat, we've had reduced barriers to communicating with parents. We, as communities and schools, we have, because we're not with students all day on campus, we actually have more opportunity to communicate with parents. And there's just mountains of research that says when parents are fully engaged, it has huge benefit to their child. And so we know that this is something that's really positive. And I think that the schools, folks in the schools are communicating with parents more as well. So that, I know that that's a silver lining. We have, we're forming stronger relationships than ever with our parents and guardians. So that's good. At an agency level for us at Communities and Schools of Central Texas, I see that we have embraced technology more fully. You know, we have a lot of social workers and I don't really think of them as being tech geeks. And yet they have gotten awfully good at Zoom, and they've all gotten set up with, you know, Google Voice and found ways to, you know, take notes and get electronic signatures. And in turn, because we have to, we have been really involved with families, getting them connected. And while this is an enormous deficit and there's huge inequity in terms of access to technology and connectivity to the internet, and that's something that still definitely has to be worked on at the district and state level, for us, we have spent, you know, just untold hours working directly with families, helping mom get an email for the first time, get on Zoom for the first time, working with Zoom on them to upload their child's immunization records so that they can be registered for school, helping them to get signed on to the school's learning platform. We have spent an entire day with just one family because there's multiple kids to get registered and enrolled. And so when this is all over, and by the way, we have also purchased hundreds and hundreds of devices and hotspots for families so that we didn't have to wait on backlogs that the schools that were trying to get the technology needs met, but hadn't. We didn't want those kids to lose 3 months of learning. So, you know, we have just pivoted in our role from all of the clinical work that we so often do, all the mental health and the emotional support that we provide, to emotional support and technology support, which is really a really different role. But we have to meet families where they are. And we're now in a period where even if all the schools open up, they might close down again if there's an outbreak, and they have got to be ready to use technology. So I think I see it that someday we'll see this as a silver lining, although right now it feels like an extremely unfortunate lack of access.
My final question is for both of you. Could you each share a personal story that highlights the impact that you're hoping to have on students and schools, or that illustrates the stakes involved? Why don't we start with you, Tasha?
So when I hear from our site coordinators about what it's like on campus, you know, I'll ask questions like, you know, what's your day-to-day look like now? You know, how are you setting up your check-ins with your students and talking to teachers and parents? And there's all kinds of barriers that they face with new protocols, and those are needed protocols. But what I love hearing is when they say, you know what, I need to check in with my second grader, and the only way I can check in is we do it by their computer. So at lunch, we have a site coordinator. She, this is her plan. She's going to go down to the students' hallway, wait for them outside their classroom door, and she's got a bucket. The student is going to put their little Chromebook in the bucket, and they're going to go with their class and walk, you know, down the hall with their face masks and they're 6 feet apart. He's going to get his lunch. She's going to wait for him. And when he exits, she's going to carry his bucket. He's going to carry his lunch, and they're going to walk all the way back to her room. He can take it out, and they can sit across the room. They can turn it on. She can check in with him. And then she can go ahead and connect him with his mentor, who's going to chat with him virtually. And just the willingness that we see, not only with our staff, but with teachers and with school staff and people in the community, to just really come together and still love and support and encourage our students is just amazing. For this student, you know, not really having a positive role model in their life, not having a person who can celebrate with them in person when they pass their test, or they can tell their story about, I didn't get in a fight with so-and-so today because I practiced what you told me, is huge. And so just that simple act, taking the bucket and carrying that Chromebook for them until they can get back, I think is a huge thing. And it illustrates the lengths at which I think we're willing to go to support students through education, but also just how important it is to be creative and innovative and not let something stop you right now.
Okay. Thank you for that. Suki, how about you?
Well, because I don't work with the students directly in my role, my first experience of what was happening with our work was in reading the case notes in our fulfillment system, for lack of a better word, of how we were providing for basic needs of families immediately after the crisis began. And so I just reviewed what notes were written by our field staff, our program staff, on what the families were experiencing. And it was things like, dad lost their job and mom's wages aren't enough to cover rent and food, so they needed financial help with food. Or student has had mental health episodes in the past, and the need is for continued support with rent so that they don't have to move right now while the student is in a fragile state. I have seen notes about large families that have tried to move across, you know, a couple of miles to access resources, and then they got there and the resources had run out, and so they were turning to CIS. Just a number of heartbreaking situations that it was not that difficult to help in the short term, but then I worry about families in the long term. And so, you know, that's sort of personal from my perspective. But I also know of our staff, you know, this idea of going above and beyond. It's all of the things that we can do in school, but also calling families and checking in on them and having a parent say, and this is what they said, you know, I didn't think anybody cared about us, and I so appreciate your calling. Just calling is, that means so much to us. Thank you so much for checking on us.
Okay. Yeah. It sounds like a theme that I'm hearing from both of you is the theme of connectedness, and how, you know, because of this pandemic, that we have to be a lot more intentional about kind of maintaining connectedness. Yeah, even, you know, even at the most basic level of, you know, mastering the technologies that we now need in order to do that. So that's one thing that has struck me as I have listened to the two of you.
Yeah. And some of that can be done with technology. We did, you know, we do lots of support groups on campus. Typically, that's how we serve most students, is in groups. And it helps them to have a support group, regardless of whether Communities and Schools is involved. And of course, we couldn't get the kids together in person, and we're still going to struggle to do that, because now that school started again in earnest, they need to be focused on academics. But we got good at doing counseling by Zoom, and making sure that that there's, you know, music at the beginning of the session or something fun, a fun icebreaker, giving kids just a chance to talk to each other in the Zoom room is huge because they don't have that opportunity. They're not together physically. And even now, back to school, they're in learning groups and it's not necessarily kids that they know very well. So yeah, we have to make more effort and we have to be more creative, but we are committed to enhancing connectedness and a sense of community that the kids can experience and that, and frankly, that the faculty can experience as well.
Okay, so we have been talking to Tasha Moore of Communities and Schools of North Texas and Suki Steinhauser of Communities and Schools of Central Texas about schools, COVID-19, and all of the extra things that people are doing in order to just navigate this very unmatched world that we're now in. For the benefit of kids, their mental health, and their educational aspirations. So Suki and Tasha, thank you so much for taking the time. We really do appreciate it.
And we appreciate your featuring our kids and how they're impacted by COVID.
This is far from our first foray into talking about mental health in schools. Back in 2016, in episode 22, Restorative Discipline in Schools, I had the pleasure of talking to Dr. Marilyn R. Moore, director of the Institute for Restorative Justice and Restorative Dialogue, about the relationship between school discipline and academic achievement. Here she is talking about restorative discipline and its potential for transforming the educational experience for the better.
It is a philosophy, it is also a movement, and it is a set of practices. And the intent behind it is to redirect society's retributive approach to crime and wrongdoing. So what that means, if you take that apart, is that restorative justice is really a victim-centered approach to wrongdoing that gives the people most directly affected by that wrongdoing the opportunity to come together for dialogue and to do what they can to make things as right as possible in the aftermath of that wrongdoing.
If you want to hear the full episode 22, I've included a link, along with other related links, in the description for today's episode 103. I hope that you enjoyed this episode, and please share it with everyone who you can think of. Just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others, so it is as well that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Please leave us a review and subscribe to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or TuneIn. Thanks for joining us.